नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्ण, वेलकम टू अवर भागवत प्रवाह ऑनलाइन कोर्स ऑन द फोर्थ कैंट ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम। इन द लास्ट फोर एपिसोड्स we have discussed the first 21 chapters of the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, and today we will discuss three chapters, chapter number 22, 23 and 24. The 22nd chapter of fourth canto describes the teachings of the four Kumaras to Prithu Maharaj, and the 23rd chapter describes how Prithu Maharaj attained perfection in his life and he went back to Godhead along with his glorious wife Archi. And the 24th chapter describes the Rudra Gita, or the chanting of the song sung by Lord Shiva in front of the Prachetas. So we will discuss these three chapters in today's episode, and we'll begin the 22nd chapter. The 21st chapter of the fourth canto ended with Prithu Maharaj's teachings to his citizens. So Prithu Maharaj was coronated as the king by so many demigods and the universal celebrities, later Prithu Maharaj chastised Mother Earth, and later he extracted all the natural resources from Earth, and after that Prithu Maharaj has conducted sacrifices. He did 99 Ashwamedha sacrifices, and in the 100th Ashwamedha Yajna, Indra came and he had stolen the horse of Prithu Maharaj. Then Brahmaji descends and then asks Prithu Maharaj to stop the sacrifice so that Indra can stop his nefarious activities. So Prithu Maharaj stops the sacrifice and Lord Vishnu is pleased, and he descends and he gives darshan to Prithu Maharaj, and Prithu Maharaj offers his heartfelt prayers to the Lord, and he comes back to his kingdom. And he conducts another sacrifice in which he has given his beautiful teachings to the citizens. And the citizens started praising Prithu Maharaj. So while this discussion between Prithu and his citizens was going on, the four Kumaras, the first sons of Brahmaji, had come to Prithu Maharaj's kingdom. So when four Kumaras came to Prithu's kingdom, Prithu Maharaj received the four Kumaras with great respect and reverence, and he was worshipping them. So that we will discuss. Right in the beginning of the 22nd chapter, we see that Prithu Maharaj had offered such an exemplary reception. The principles of guest reception in the Vedic culture are so great and wonderful that several wonderful personalities like Prithu Maharaj has taught us how to receive Brahmanas and saintly people at home. Even Lord Krishna also, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, he receives a Brahmana, a messenger sent by Queen Rukmini. Once Rukmini sends a love letter to Krishna so that Krishna can come and kidnap Rukmini Devi and marry her. So that letter was sent by Rukmini to Krishna through a Brahmana, and Krishna has received this Brahmana with great respect and love and affection. And also when Sudama, Krishna's friend, came to Dwaraka also, Krishna received Sudama very well. And when Vidura came to Hastinapur, all the Pandavas headed by Yudhishthir Maharaj, they received Vidura so nicely and so lovingly. And even Bhishma, who was lying on the deathbed, when so many universal celebrities including Krishna, Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, Narada, Parashuram, Dhaumya and many such exalted personalities came at the deathbed of Bhishma, Bhishma received them with great respect. Although he did not have any facilities to offer and he was unable to move because his whole body was pierced with arrows, still Bhishma welcomed them with great respect and reverence, with only his sweet words. And we have so many such examples. Once Gargamuni comes to Nanda Maharaj's house in Vrindavan, and Nanda Maharaj receives Gargamuni very well, and glorifies Gargamuni. So especially when saintly people come to the house of householders or kshatriyas, then the householders receive those saints or brahmanas or sages with great respect, because these people visit these householders' houses without any personal agenda or selfish agenda. They come to the houses of these householders only to enlighten them on the spiritual knowledge. Here, Prithu Maharaj, also being an exemplary householder and an exemplary king, he received the four Kumaras with great respect and reverence and worshipped them and washed their lotus feet. These four Kumaras look like small boys, but Prithu Maharaj respected them because they are the first created beings by Brahma and they have all spiritual knowledge and they can enlighten the humanity. And they have come here to enlighten Prithu Maharaj, as predicted by the professional bards at the time of the appearance of Prithu only. So Prithu praised the four Kumaras in various ways. He said, Oh, four Kumaras, you are very rarely seen by common people. Your darshan is very rare. So for this such brahmanas and sages to meet kshatriyas is a very rare happening. Even Parikshit also told Sukadeva Goswami, when Parikshit was fasting on the banks of Ganges, he has made a decision to fast until his death. At that time, Sukadeva Goswami came and enlightened Parikshit Maharaj, and Sukadeva Goswami was thanked by Parikshit in various ways. So you have come to sanctify our whole existence by seeing you, by touching you, by washing your lotus feet, and by interacting with you. So we get completely purified. Something similar is also spoken by Prithu Maharaj to the four Kumaras. He said that your darshan is extremely rare, and pleasing vipras or brahmanas like you, we can receive the favor of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Because Vishnu is Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha. So Vishnu is very affectionate and respectful to all brahmanas and the cows. And if we respect brahmanas and cows, we can become an object of affection and mercy for Krishna. The Supreme Lord Vishnu or Krishna will bestow all benedictions upon those people who worship cows and brahmanas. And it is very, this kind of darshan is very rare. And these people come only to enlighten the householders. Even Nanda Maharaj also tells Gargamuni, Mahadvichalanam drunam grihinam dina chetasam nishreyasaya bhagavan kalpate na anyatha kvachit. So Mahadvichalanam drunam, the purpose of the travelings of great souls or pure devotees is only to enlighten the common people, only to enlighten the conditioned souls in spiritual knowledge. So just with an intention to cause the supreme welfare to people in general, they travel from one place to another place. There is no selfishness. There is no personal agenda. There are no personal motivations there. So fortunate are those householders, although they are poor, if the householders have the courtesy and culture to welcome such brahmanas and sages in their houses and give them all hospitality and worship and inquire from them submissively and learn spiritual subject matters from them, such householders are very fortunate. A householder is not fortunate by one's wealth. A householder is fortunate by one's courtesy and culture of receiving glorious guests, especially devotee guests. So a householder is considered very fortunate when he gives worthy reception to brahmanas like this. That's what Prithu Maharaj says. And Prithu Maharaj also says that there are some householders who are very rich, very wealthy, but if they do not have the culture or courtesy to receive brahmanas and devotees of the Lord and get enlightened from them, then such householders are not very fortunate. They are very unfortunate. Even if they have so much of wealth. Fortune is not having wealth. Fortune is having culture and etiquette. And fortune is having an inclination to respect devotees of the Lord. So you four Kumaras are very strict brahmacharis. You are Naishtika brahmacharis. You have taken a lifelong vow of celibacy. and you have absolutely no inclination for any sense gratification. Your only purpose is to dedicate yourself completely to Vasudeva. You are Vasudeva Parayana. And I don't have to ask for your welfare. Whenever somebody, some guest comes to our house, we should ask, how has been your traveling? So did you eat properly? How did you reach here? What is the purpose of your coming here? Are you happy? Are you well? So these are like natural inquiries asked by a host when a guest comes to his house. But when sages come, it's not necessary for a householder to ask about their welfare. Are you well? Of course they are well, because they are totally dedicated to the Lord. They are well. And what is the purpose of their traveling? To enlighten people. So these people come to the houses of sages or brahmanas or pure Vaishnavas. They come to the houses of householders not to beg some charity or not to receive something from these householders, but to offer something to householders. Even if the householders are giving some dakshina or some food to these brahmanas, it is done only out of a gesture of gratitude more than a sense of pride of maintaining these poor brahmanas. So a householder feels grateful for an opportunity to receive a brahmana guest at their house, and that is the Vedic culture. And the brahmanas are giving them the invaluable spiritual knowledge. In comparison to this invaluable spiritual knowledge and guidance, what is that little bit, handful of rice or little bit of grains and food that they receive? So they can get it anywhere. And even if they don't get it anywhere, they can eat fruits and roots in the forest and they can survive. So that is the glory of the sages in the Vedic days. So he says that no need of asking about your welfare. So your travels are meant for the benefit of people in general. And he says that, in fact, it is the Supreme Lord who travels in the form of Siddharupas like you. Vyaktam Atmavatam Atma Bhagavan Atma Bhavanaha. It is the Supreme Lord Bhagavan Krishna who directly travels in the form of sages to enlighten common people. So even Vidura also tells Maitreya, Janasya Krishna Dvimukhasya Daivat Adharmashilasya Sudukhitasya Anugrahayeha Charantinunam Bhutani Bhavyani Janardhanasya. Janasya Krishna Dvimukhasya. Common people are generally averse to a sense of subordination to Krishna. They are not inclined to bhakti yoga. They have become Krishnad vimukha, Daivad vimukha, Adharma shilasya. They have become so unrighteous and irreligious. Sudukhitasya. Because of that, they have become extremely miserable, undergoing so many difficulties. Anugrahayeha. To show anugraha, to show some mercy upon such people. Charantinunam, great devotees travel from one place to another place to convert this Krishna Dvimukha people into Krishna Sumukha people, to convert their Adharma Shilasya people into Parodharma Shila people, to convert that Sudukhitasya people into Susukham Kartum Avyayam. So to cause the greatest welfare to people in general, sages like Four Kumaras or Narada Muni or many other exalted devotees travel from one place to another place and meet some householders at times. Now, then Prithu Maharaj spoke like this. Four Kumaras felt very happy and pleased. They said, my dear Prithu, you are so glorious, because Prithu Maharaj's speech was very sweet, concise, meaningful, appropriate. So Sanat Kumara started speaking to Prithu Maharaj. So in the 18th shloka he says, oh Prithu, you have asked very beneficial questions. Because our Prithu Maharaj asked a question. He said that, oh Four Kumaras, what is the means of benefit for all those suffering souls in this world? So on behalf of all conditioned souls, with an intention to derive some guidance from these Four Kumaras, Prithu Maharaj asked this question. He said, what is the way in which the humanity can attain the highest welfare? So when Prithu Maharaj asked like this, Sanat Kumara was impressed with this question. You are asking about the welfare of the entire humanity? Because you are such a magnanimous soul, you can ask like that. Your speech is so wonderful, sweet and beneficial and useful for everybody. So And the meetings between great souls is also very beneficial for the entire humanity. This is not a private conversation that is happening between four Kumaras and the Spruti Maharaj. It is a conversation which is universally relevant. It is relevant for the entire humanity. And because Prithu is so attached to glorification of the Lord, whatever he is asking, these great souls, four Kumaras, it is beneficial for the humanity. He says, Sanat Kumar says, Astyeva Rajan Bhavato Madhudvishaha, this is 20th Shloka, Padaravindasya Guna Anuvandane, Ratir Durapa Vidhunoti Naishtiki, Kamam Kashayam Malamantaratmanaha. He says, Astyeva Rajan Bhavato Madhudvishaha. Oh Lord, you have already dedicated your heart, mind, body and words to the glorification of Krishna. You have dedicated yourself to hearing Krishna Katha. Bhavato Madhudvishaha. That Madhudvisha is your worshipable Lord. And Padaravindasya Gunanuvandane. You are offering obeisances to his Padaravinda and you are also having a lot of appreciation for his Gunas, qualities. And Ratir Durapa Vidhunoti Naishtiki. And such attraction towards the lotus feet of the Lord and the glories of the Lord can completely vanquish all contamination in the heart. He says like that. And only by such attachment to Krishna Katha, one can be relieved of attachment to bodily conception and one can develop attachment to the Supreme Lord. So, attachment to Krishna and detachment from Maya can happen by hearing Krishna Katha. Then the four Kumaras begin their beautiful teachings. They said so many things to the King Prithu Maharaj. So we will discuss some of the highlights of their teachings. So in the 23rd Shloka, Sanat Kumara speaks. He says that, Arthendriya Rama Sagoshtya Trishnaya Tat Sammatanam Aparigrahenacha Vivikta Ruchya Paritosha Atmani Vinahareer Gunapiyusha Panath. Very beautiful shloka that has so many instructions. He says, Arthendriya Rama Sagoshtya Atrishnaya. Artha Indriya Arama. Indriya means senses, Arama means enjoyment of the senses or sense gratification. Indriya Arama means sense gratification. Artha Indriya Arama Sagoshti Atrishnaya. There are some people who are so much attached to sense enjoyment or sense gratification, and we should not get into their association. So we should give up the association of materialistic people attached to sense enjoyment. Arthendriya Rama Sagoshtya Trishnaya Tat Sammatanam Aparigrahenacha. Anything connected to sense gratification should not be accepted by a devotee. Aparigrahenacha. Vivikta Ruchya Paritosha Atmani. Having distaste in sense enjoyment, Paritosha Atmani, one has to be very satisfied with whatever comes of one's own accord. And one has to be satisfied within oneself. Paritosha Atmani. And do what? Vina Harer Guna Piyusha Panat. One should mold one's life in such a way that one cannot stay or survive without hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord. Vina Harer Guna Piyusha Panat. Harer Guna means the qualities of Lord Hari. Piyusha means nectar. Panat means drinking. So we should mold our life in such a way that we cannot stay or we cannot survive without drinking the nectar of Krishna's qualities. So basically, we need to prioritize hearing about the Supreme Lord's Nama, Rupa, Guna, Leela in our life. Another important teaching, 24th Shloka, he says, Ahimsaya Paramaham Sacharyaya Smritya Mukunda Charitagriya Sidhuna Yamaira kamair niyamais chapya nindaya nirihaya dvandvati tikshayacha. Ahimsaya, one has to be non-violent. Number two, paramahamsa charyaya, one has to follow the footsteps of great souls, paramahamsas. So swan-like devotees are very exemplary in their character and we are supposed to follow their footsteps. Ahimsaya paramahamsa charyaya smritya mukunda charitagriya sidhuna You should always remember the beautiful, wonderful activities of Lord Mukunda. Yamair akamair. Yamair means yamair akamair niyamaischapi. We have to follow yama and niyama, means rules and regulations. With what mood? Akamair. Without any expectation of results. Some people may follow different rules and regulations in expectation of some material benefit. But we have to follow the spiritual rules and regulations without expecting any material benediction in return. Yamair akamair niyamaischapi. The next sixth element is anindaya. Aninda means not criticizing others. One should not unnecessarily criticize other people. There are so many, and the followers of one spiritual path should not unnecessarily criticize another bona fide spiritual path out of insecurity or envy. If something is not bona fide and if it is a necessity, one has to condemn any misconception created in the society, or one should be clearing the misconception and establishing the right authority of scriptural knowledge, but one should not unnecessarily get into criticizing others. So anindaya niyamaischapi anindaya nirihaya dvandvatitikshayacha. One has to be very self-controlled, and dvandvatiksha means one has to be very tolerant towards the dualities. This is another beautiful teaching. Then 25th shloka. In all these teachings, the process of hearing Krishna Katha is specifically emphasized. In the 25th shloka, Sanat Kumara speaks to our Prithu Maharaj. He says, Harer muhustat parakarna pura gunabhidhane na vijrumbhamanaya bhaktya hyasanga sadasatyanatmani syanirgune brahmani chanjasarati. This also is speaking the same essence. We will not go into the details of every single word in this shloka. The essence is, if we are dedicated to the process of hearing Krishna Katha, hearing the glories of Lord Hari, hearing about God, that will give us attachment to Him and detachment from this matter. Attachment to spirit and detachment to matter comes by hearing about the Supreme Lord. Simple. So in this way, the four Kumaras give very beautiful, wonderful teachings to our Prithu Maharaj. In the 39th and 40th shlokas of this chapter, the teachings given by four Kumaras are like really precious. So the shlokas number 39 and 40 are very heart-touching and establish the superiority of Bhakti Yoga. In the 39th shloka, he says, four Kumaras say, Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya karmashayam grathitamud grathayanti santaha tadvanna riktamatayo yatayo apiruddha shroto ganastamaranam bhajavasudevam. In this shloka, the glory of bhakti, bhakti yoga, is wonderfully established. Yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya. If we offer bhakti or devotional service to the lotus feet of the Lord, pankaja palasa vilasa. So pankaja is lotus. So the Lord's feet are like petals of lotus. If we serve those lotus feet, yat pada pankaja palasa vilasa bhaktya, karmashayam grathitam udgrathayanti santaha. Karmashaya means aspirations for sense enjoyment. Karma is fruitive work, means work that is done in expectation of sense gratification or some material benefit. Karmashayam, all our aspirations for fruitive sense gratification are uprooted by serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Karmashayam grathitam udgrathayanti santaha tadvanna riktamatayo. But those people who are devoid of bhakti, although they are trying so hard, endeavoring so much, they cannot even control their senses. What to speak of uprooting their material desires? Right? Tadvanna riktamatayo. Riktamatayo means devoid of bhakti. Riktamatayo yatayo piruddha sroto ganastamaranam. They cannot even control their senses. What to speak of uprooting their fruitive mentalities? So, conclusion is bhaja vasudevam. భజ వాసుదేవ మీన్స్ రెండర్ సర్వీస్ టు లార్డ్ వాసుదేవ. దిస్ ఇస్ ద కంక్లూజివ్ టీచింగ్ ఆఫ్ ఫోర్ కుమారస్. అండ్ ద నెక్స్ట్ శ్లోక 40th శ్లోక ది కంటిన్యూ ది డిస్కషన్. దిస్ ఏ దట్ కృచ్రో మహన్ ఇహ భవార్ణవమప్లవేషాం షడ్వర్గన క్రమ సుఖేనతి తీరిషంతి తత్వం హరేర్ భగవతో భజనీయమంఘ్రిం కృత్వాడుపం వ్యసనముత్తర దుస్తరారణం. ఫోర్ కుమారస్ కృచ్రో మహన్ ఇహ భవార్ణవం అప్లవేషాం. టు క్రాస్ ఓవర్ దిస్ ఓషన్ ఆఫ్ మెటీరియల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్ ఇస్ ఎక్స్ట్రీమ్లీ డిఫికల్ట్. కృచ్ర మీన్స్ డిఫికల్ట్. వై? షడ్వర్గన క్రమ సుఖేన తితీరిషంతి means this ocean of material existence is filled with so many sharks of the six senses of different anarthas like lust, pride, anger, envy, greed. They are all considered big sharks. We are like poor people drowning in the ocean of material existence without any knowledge of swimming, and big sharks like the six senses and the six anarthas are constantly trying to devour us. So how can we come out? So we don't know swimming also, and we are drowning. The only way that can only thing that can rescue us is a strong boat. When a boat comes, which is driven by a proper captain, when the boat comes, then they will rescue us from this ocean and keep us on the boat. The boat is so strong that we can easily cross over this material existence despite so many sharks or whatever. The boat is very powerful boat. No shark can shake this boat. So that's why in the third line he says తత్వం హరేర్ భగవతో భజనీయమంఘ్రిం. దేర్ ఫార్ వర్షిప్ ద లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద సుప్రీం లార్డ్ కృష్ణ అండ్ కృత్వోడుపం. దాట్ వర్షిప్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణస్ లోటస్ ఫీట్ విల్ యాక్ట్ లైక్ ఎ బోట్. వాట్ ఈస్ ద బోట్ దట్ కెన్ ప్రొటెక్ట్ ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ మెటీరియల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్? దట్ ఈస్ ద బోట్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణస్ ఫీట్, ద బోట్ ఆఫ్ భక్తి. దెన్ కృత్వోడుపం వ్యసనముత్తర దుస్తరారణం. ఇట్ కెన్ ఈజీలీ మేక్ అస్ క్రాస్ ఓవర్ దిస్ ఓషన్ ఆఫ్ మెటీరియల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్. అనదర్ సీక్రెట్, the boat of Krishna's lotus feet will not only help us to cross over this material existence easily, the boat of Krishna's lotus feet is very mystical, that it can reduce the size of this ocean also. To what degree? The ocean has no shore only. It is very expansive ocean, but Krishna's lotus feet will just condense the ocean as much as a calf's hoof print. In the 10th canto it is said, సమాశ్రితాయే పదపల్లవప్లవం మహత్పదం పుణ్యయశోమురారే భవాంబుధిర్ వత్సపదం పరం పదం 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 యద్విపదం నతేషాం. దిస్ భవాంబుధి, ద ఓషన్ ఆఫ్ మెటీరియల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్, విల్ బికమ్ జస్ట్ యాజ్ బిగ్ యాజ్ కాఫ్స్ హూఫ్ ప్రింట్. యూ కెన్ ఈజీలీ జంప్ ఓవర్. సో ద లోటస్ ఫీట్ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్ విల్ యాక్ట్ లైక్ ఎ ప్రాపర్ స్ట్రాంగ్ బోట్ దట్ కెన్ హెల్ప్ అస్ క్రాస్ ఓవర్ దిస్ ఓషన్ ఆఫ్ మెటీరియల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్. So in this way, Four Kumaras enlightened our Prithu Maharaj with various teachings, especially on Bhakti Yoga. Then this Prithu Maharaj expresses his heartfelt gratitude to Four Kumaras. A teacher enlightens the student and the student expresses his gratitude. So whoever is giving us spiritual knowledge and guiding us on the spiritual path are worshipable people. So we need to be extremely grateful to those people, all the acharyas. And Prithu Maharaj says that, Oh Lord, Four Kumaras, by your mercy, I have attained these teachings and I am totally indebted to you, and this is a non-repayable debt. Very beautifully he says, Yairi drishi bhagavato gatiratmavada ekantato nigamabhi pratipaditanah తుష్యంత్వదభ్రకరుణః స్వకృతేన నిత్యం కో నామ తత్ ప్రతికరోతి వినోద పాత్రం. ఇన్ ది శ్లోక, ద ఎసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ది శ్లోక ఈస్, ఓ ఫోర్ కుమారస్ ఆర్ ఓ టీచర్స్ ఆఫ్ స్పిరిచువల్ సైన్స్, ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎక్స్ట్రీమ్లీ డిఫికల్ట్ ఫర్ ఎ కామన్ కండిషన్ సోల్ టు రీపే డెట్ దట్ హీ ఓవ్స్ టు యూ. So this Four Kumaras and all the great sages and acharyas and teachers of Bhakti Yoga, they are giving us so much to the humanity. They are giving so many wonderful teachings on Bhakti, and we can never repay their debt. He says that Tushyanti adabhra karunah svakritena nityam. They are satisfied with their own compassionate and benevolent activities. They are satisfied like that. And we cannot repay their debt. If we think that we can repay the debt, okay, he has given me teachings, he has given me classes for one semester, I'll give him some money and I have paid the fees and I'm done with this person. No more relationship with this person. It's not like that. So the exchange of spiritual knowledge is not equivalent to some transmission of material knowledge. In material education, one may pay some remuneration to a teacher and then get some teachings for earning his livelihood. But it is not like that in spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge is bestowed with compassion and earned with gratitude. The recipient of spiritual knowledge should have gratitude, and the proponent of spiritual knowledge should have mercy and compassion. So spiritual knowledge is transmitted with compassion and received with gratitude. When the receiver and transmitter have these qualifications, then the whole process of transmission is very effective. It's not a material exchange where you pay some money and then receive this book and receive this knowledge and then it's done. Actually, one cannot repay the debt to such spiritual masters. So, ko nama tat pratikaroti? Who can repay the debt to a guru? Who can repay the debt to an acharya? We know the patram. If you think that you can repay the debt of an acharya, you are a joker. So, we know the patram. We know the means comedy. We know the means some laughter. So, a joker, he performs so many activities to cause laughter, to just make people laugh. So similarly, if I think that I can repay the debt of an acharya who is giving us spiritual teachings, I become a joker, my activities will only cause laughter. And Vinodapatram also has another meaning, Vina Udapatram. Just like you go to Mother Ganges and to worship Mother Ganges, you take water from that Ganges river only and offer it back to Ganges. Offering the water of Ganges to Ganges only back. That is considered worship. Similarly, we receive teachings from the spiritual master or acharyas. The whole Vaishnava parampara, the lineage of spiritual masters, and we receive these teachings and we offer it back to them only, in the sense that we receive the teachings and we make a sincere attempt to imbibe those teachings, implement those teachings, transmit those teachings transparently for the transformation of people. When the transcendental teachings coming from the parampara are transparently transmitted to the humanity, that will create transformation and stop the tribulations in the material existence. So by our we can reciprocate with the compassion of these acharyas by receiving their teachings gratefully and spreading those teachings. We can preserve this Vedic culture, preserve this spiritual knowledge by propagating it. Here, preservation is not just keeping it inside a store. Preservation happens by propagation. So like that, Prithu Maharaj expressed his heartfelt gratitude to four Kumaras and teaching all of us also how to be grateful to our teachers, spiritual teachers and acharyas. So Prithu Maharaj was thus fixed in his whole process of bhakti yoga, and he always thought himself to be a servant of the Lord, and he always took care of the citizens like an exemplary ruler, a great father. And the further qualities of Prithu Maharaj are described in the end of this 22nd chapter. Prithu Maharaj was tolerant like earth. Prithu Maharaj was unconquerable like fire. He was powerful like sun. He is pleasing and celebrated like the moon. He is beautiful like Cupid. He is fearless like lion. He is affectionate like Manu. He is powerful like Brahma. Like that, he is compared with so many different personalities and his qualities are described. So that completes the 22nd chapter, and we enter the 23rd chapter where Prithu Maharaj retires from his active responsibility as a king. He gives the kingdom to his descendants and he retires along with Archi. So when Prithu Maharaj went to the forest to perform full-time devotional service, Queen Archi also followed Prithu Maharaj and she rendered various services to Prithu as he was doing his austerities. And he was doing so many austerities according to the seasons. And the purpose of all his austerities is not to attain some mystic powers or material boons. Demons also performed austerities. Just like Hiranyakashipu or Ravana, they also performed austerities to receive material boons from different devatas. But here, Prithu is doing so many austerities, accepting a lot of voluntary inconveniences upon himself, only to please the Supreme Lord, only to worship the Supreme Lord. He is just fasting from sense enjoyment and feasting on meditation on the Supreme Lord. And the results of his austerities are steadfastness, joyfulness, and self-control, detachment, etc. So thus, Prithu Maharaj attained unflinching devotion to the Lord, and eventually Prithu Maharaj left his body. And Archi, who has been serving Prithu Maharaj, saw that her husband has left her body. So what did Archi do? Archi definitely lamented for a while, but she did not continue her lamentation, because it's bound to happen. The person has to leave the body, and that's the purpose. Till the time of death, they have taken a vow to practice devotional service, and the death has arrived. So Archi was not surprised or astonished or disheartened or discouraged. So what did she do? She arranged a funeral pyre, and she took her bath and lit fire to this funeral pyre on which her husband's dead body was placed, and she also entered the fire. One may say that, oh, poor woman, she lost her husband in the forest. Although they were such great personalities who ruled the earth, they did not have anyone when they died, and this poor woman committed suicide in the funeral pyre of her husband. One may think like that from an external or material perspective. But after this Archi jumped into the fire that is burning her husband's dead body, what happened? Vaikuntha airplane scheme. Two airplanes came to take Prithu Maharaj and Archi, both this wife and husband, back to Vaikuntha Loka, to the spiritual realm. And this was visible to all the demigods and demigoddesses in the higher planetary systems. The devatas in the heavenly planets, they were seeing how Prithu and Archi were going back to Godhead in Vaikuntha airplanes. So whenever somebody performs bhakti yoga with great sincerity throughout one's life, one will not be deprived of success in spiritual life. One will be going back to the Supreme Lord's abode, Supreme Eternal abode. And although externally, to the eyes of these materialistic people, sometimes a devotee may seemingly be suffering in this world, but a devotee doesn't suffer. Devotee goes back to Godhead. While in this world, devotee is experiencing spiritual bliss and great transcendental joy within by one's meditation on the Lord. And also the devotee is experiencing great bliss, and he will enter the spiritual abode, and he experiences spiritual bliss in the company of the Lord also. So all the devatas in the heavenly planets, as they were seeing Archi and Prithu ascending to the spiritual world, they said that, see, this Archi is such a glorious woman. She has surpassed all the devatas, even human beings. Human beings, although they have a short lifespan, in comparison to the devatas, we have very short lifespan. But the human beings are more fortunate, because within this one small lifetime only, they can perfect their life, they can go back to Godhead, if only they can utilize that human life properly. And we are stuck up in this heavens, in the midst of so much of enjoyment, we may not feel so much of impetus to perform bhakti unto the Lord like the human beings. They are more fortunate than us. But if somebody attains human life and does not utilize that human life for perfection, he is so unfortunate. He is considered the killer of soul. They say in the 28th shloka, they are saying, Savanchito batat madruk krichre namahata bhavi labdhvapavargam manushyam Vishayeshu Vishajyate. They say that Savanchito Bhatatmadrik, a person who does not utilize his human life, is Atmadrik, a killer of the self. And Vanchito, he is cheating his own self. Krichrena Mahatabhavi. In this earthly planet, Krichrena, with great difficulty, one has attained Manushyam Labdhva, means he has attained a human life, which is apavargyam, which can give us liberation. But if one is not utilizing that for liberation and utilizing it for vishayeshu vishajyate, to get absorbed in sense gratification, he is a atmadrak, he is a cheater. of his own self. He is a killer of soul. So the right utility of human life is not sense gratification. The right utility of human life is to perform devotional service unto Krishna and go back to Godhead. And to teach other people also this bhakti yoga and to enable them also to go back to Godhead. That is the right way of utilizing human life. So Archie went back to Godhead, Prithu went back to Godhead, and the demigods are appreciating. So in this way, Prithu Maharaj has perfected his life, and one who faithfully hears and reads this whole episode of Prithu Maharaj can attain Vaikuntha and perfect one's life. And one must hear the character of Prithu Maharaj. That increases one's faith and devotion. So we completed the Prithu Maharaj episode. Now, in the lineage of Prithu Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj's son is Vijitashva. And Vijitashva married Sikhandini and Nabhaswati. And he got several sons like Pavaka, Pavamana and Suchi and Havirdhana. And Havirdhana, the son of Vijitashva, he begot 6 sons. Of these 6 sons, Havirdhana's first son is Prachina Barhi. He is also called Prachina Barhishat. And in short, he is also called Barhishat. So this is Prithu's lineage, which is described in the 24th chapter. So Prithu Maharaj's lineage is very wonderful. In that lineage, after a couple of generations, we have this king called Prachina Barhi. So this Prachina Barhi, who was the eldest son of Havirdhana, he begot 10 sons in the womb of Shatadruti. Shatadruti was the daughter of ocean god. When Prachina Barhi was marrying Shatadruti, they were circumambulating this fire. So during the marriage, the boy and girl will circumambulate this fire. So at that time, fire god saw Shatadruti. Shatadruti was so beautiful. This fire god, who was supposed to be a witness of this marriage, fire is considered very pure and uncontaminated and pure witness of things. And he is supposed to bless this couple. But somehow this fire god got attracted to Shatadruti. She was so beautiful. So it is not to offend this fire god, but the point is the attraction towards opposite gender is so prominent in this material world that even fire god also is attracted to this girl who was getting married. So the attraction between male and female is so prominent in this world, and that is a real maya that can entangle one in this material existence perpetually in the repeated cycle of birth and death. One should carefully try to transcend this attraction as much as possible, and that happens in the association of devotees when we practice bhakti yoga sincerely. But this is there. One has to tolerate this urge. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Shaknoti yahaiva yashodham praksharira vimokshana kamakrodhodbhavam vegam sayuktaha sasukhi naraha. Shaknoti. This kama krodha udbhavam vegam, the vega, the urge for sense gratification, means lust and anger, continue to exist till the last breath of one's life. One has to tolerate them. Tolerate them till the end of one's life. Such a person is really fixed up in the process of bhakti yoga. So anyways, somehow the marriage of Prachina Barhi and Shatadruti happened. And through Shatadruti, Prachina Barhi begot 10 sons. So, and these 10 sons were sent to the forest to perform austerities. Why austerities? The reason is, these princes, our Prachina Barhi's sons called Prachetas, who are the princes, who are the sons of great king Prachina Barhi, they are supposed to be taking up to household life and ruling the kingdom. But in the palace life, one is attended to by so many ministers and soldiers and servants, servant maids. Lot of facilities are there. So much of opulence is there. So much of influence is there. When words have lot of strength and value, if a king gives an order, then people have to follow that order. So much of authority is there. So if one does not have the background of controlling one's senses, one will become a victim of uncontrolled senses in this palace life, in this kingdom, in this great kingdom with a lot of influence. So, in the olden days, the rulers, the kings would send their sons, the princes, to go to the forest and perform some austerities and live a life of celibacy, live a life of austerity, live a life of sense control and mind control, and live with basic facilities in the forest so that they can become strong in their senses and mind and intelligence, and they can become spiritually strong also, and they will have the necessary self-control when they come and live in the palace. They will not be distracted by it. And after living in the palace for a while and ruling the kingdom for a while, all these people are supposed to retire at the right time and go back to the forest only. One cannot live in the palace till the last breath of one's life. One has to retire and go to the forest and perform full-time bhakti. So, one should not be distracted by sense gratification while living in the palace. That's why this kind of training, brahmachari training, is very much important. And one has to go to the forest to perform so many austerities. So, Prithuma, our Prachina Varahi, had responsibly sent these Prachetas to go to the forest and perform austerities. So, they went. So, when the Prachetas were going inside the forest, they saw a very calm lake, very pleasant lake with clear waters filled with lotuses and birds like Chakravaka and swans and trees and creepers and bees, and the lotus pollen was scattered everywhere. And not only this beautiful ambience that is pleasing to the eyes and body, they also have heard pleasant sounds of musical instruments. In the forest, you can hear the pleasant sounds of chirping of birds, but they also heard some music, pleasant music, which is being played with nice instruments. So these Prachetas were wondering, what is this celestial music? What is this beautiful ambience? And where have we come? They have come to the forest to perform austerities. So suddenly they saw Lord Shiva appearing from that water reservoir. And Shiva came voluntarily to guide these Prachetas, because Shiva understood that these Prachetas have come to the forest to worship the Supreme Lord, to please the Supreme Lord. So Shiva has voluntarily come there to enlighten these princes in the process of worshipping Vasudeva. And he came in front of them and he said, you can see in that shloka, 28th shloka, he said, Yah param brahma sasakshat triguna jiva samgitat bhagavantam vasudevam prapannah sapriyo hime. Shiva said, Yah param brahma sasakshat triguna jiva samgitat, that Supreme Lord who is beyond the three material modes and who is the origin of all living entities is Lord Vasudeva. And whoever surrenders unto that Lord Vasudeva is very dear to me. So, Bhagavantam Vasudevam Prapannaha Sa Priyohime. Prapanna means surrendered. If you surrender unto Vasudeva, you become dear to me. Shiva says this. So, Shiva likes the devotees of Vishnu or Krishna or Vasudeva more than his own devotees, because many of the devotees of Lord Shiva worship Shiva for material boons. Once there was a demon named Vrakasur. He worshipped Lord Shiva to attain some material boon. And his way of worship is, he would cut some flesh from his own body and throw it in the sacrificial fire. So he's just taking out flesh from his body, different body limbs, and throwing it in the fire. That is his kind of worship. Shiva did not manifest. And finally, this Vrikasar was frustrated, and then he was about to cut his head and throw in the fire. At that time, Shiva just manifested from the sacrificial fire and said, stop this nonsense, what do you want? Then Vrikasar said, I want a benediction. And the benediction is, if I put my hand on somebody's head, he should be burnt to ashes. This is the benediction that he wanted. And Shiva was obliged. He promised. So he gave that benediction. And later this Vrikasar wanted to put his hand on Shiva's head only. And somehow Vishnu comes and protects Shiva. So it's a very long episode. But the point is, many times some demoniac people worship Shiva for material boons, and Shiva may give them also out of obligation, But Shiva is not impressed with such materialistic people and demoniac people. Shiva is more happy with devotees of Lord Vasudeva. So here it's very clearly said, Bhagavantam Vasudevam Prapannahasa Priyohime. In Shiva's words, we can see that Vasudeva's devotees are very dear to Shiva, and Shiva himself is a Vaishnava. Bhagavatam says, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. Shambhu means Shiva is the greatest of all Vaishnavas. So then, Shiva teaches them Rudra Gita. So Lord Shiva wanted to enlighten all the Prachetas in the whole process of Bhakti Yoga, and he teaches them Rudra Gita. And this Rudra Gita has four parts. So in the first part, Lord Shiva offers his obeisances to all the controlling deities of various senses and all the elements. He offers obeisances to the Chaturvyuha. First, Shiva offers a prayer to Vasudeva, then later Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. Basically, the purpose of offering all these prayers in the first part of his Rudra Gita was to purify one's own internal and external senses. Vasudeva is the presiding deity of consciousness. So Lord Shiva offers a prayer to Vasudeva saying that, "Oh Lord Vasudeva, please purify my consciousness from material attachments." Next, he offers prayers to Lord Sankarsana, who is the deity of false ego. Shiva says, "Oh Lord Sankarsana, please purify my false ego. Please make..." Ego is basically identification. That ego is called false ego when we identify ourselves with the material body. We are not bodies. We are servants of Krishna. We are souls. But if we identify ourselves with this body and the bodily designations like male, female, Indian, American, cat, dog, etc., etc., that is false ego. So Shiva is offering obeisances to the deity of false ego, Sankarsana, to make himself identify as a servant of the Lord. That is the true ego. And later Shiva offers obeisances to Pradyumna, the deity of intelligence, the presiding deity of intelligence, the controller of intelligence, so that he can utilize his intelligence in planning and scheming for Krishna Seva. And he offers obeisances to Aniruddha. Aniruddha is the deity of mind. So he offers obeisances to Aniruddha, seeking blessing from him so that he can engage his mind in thinking about Krishna. The functions are functions of mind are thinking, feeling and willing. If we direct our thinking, feeling and willing to Krishna's service, the Supreme Lord's service, that is the right utility of mind. For that, we need blessings from the controlling deities of all these antahkaranas. This chitta, man, buddhi, ahankar means consciousness, intelligence, ego and mind. So these four put together are called antahkaranas. The Chaturvyuhas are Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. These four are the presiding deities of these four antahkaranas. So Shiva offers prayers to these four presiding deities to purify his antahkaranas and align them towards the process of Bhakti Yoga. And later, Shiva similarly offers obeisances to different other deities like Surya, Agni, Soma, then Vayu, Nabha, and he also offers obeisances to Krishna, so that he can purify all his external senses. May my hands and legs and eyes and ears, everything be dedicated to Krishna's service. Everything be dovetailed in Bhakti Yoga. So that completes the first part of Shiva's prayers. The first part of Shiva's prayers are basically offering prayers to the Supreme Lord Krishna in his forms as various deities like Chaturvyuha and many other devatas or presiding deities that are controlling our bodily senses and internal antahkaranas. So next comes in the second part of our Rudra Gita, Shiva describes the beautiful form of the Supreme Lord Krishna or Vishnu. Sometimes he glorifies Krishna and sometimes he glorifies Krishna in his four-handed form as Vishnu or Narayana also. So like that, he describes the beautiful form and he mentions the glory of seeing and serving that form. In the 44th shloka, Rudra says, Shiva says, దర్శనం నోది దృక్షూణాం దేహి భాగవతార్చితం రూపం ప్రియతమం స్వానాం సర్వేంద్రియ గుణాంజనం. దర్శనం నో దిదృక్షూణాం, ఓ లార్డ్ ప్లీజ్ గివ్ అస్ దర్శన్. దిదృక్షూణాం, వి ఆర్ వెరీ ఈగర్ టు హ్యావ్ యువర్ దర్శన్. దేహి గివ్ అస్ భాగవతార్చితం అండ్ గివ్ అస్ దర్శన్ విచ్ ఈజ్ గివ్ అస్ దర్శన్ ఆఫ్ దట్ ఫామ్ విచ్ ఈజ్ వర్షిపబుల్ బై గ్రేట్ భాగవతాస్ విచ్ ఈస్ వెరీ డియర్ టు డివోటీస్. స్వానాం ప్రియతమం, రూపం ప్రియతమం స్వానాం అండ్ సర్వేంద్రియ గుణాంజనం. వెన్ వీ టేక్ దర్శన్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణస్ ఫామ్ దట్ ఈస్ ప్లీజింగ్ టు ఆల్ సెన్సెస్. వెన్ వీ సీ సమ్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్ దట్ ఈస్ ప్లీజింగ్ టు ద ఐస్. బట్ శివా సేస్ ఇఫ్ యూ సీ కృష్ణస్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ఫామ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ ప్లీజింగ్ టు ఆల్ ద సెన్సెస్. వై? బికాస్ వెన్ యూ ఆర్ సీయింగ్ కృష్ణ ఇట్స్ వెరీ ప్లెజెంట్ టు ద ఐస్, నో డౌట్. కృష్ణ ఇస్ ప్లేయింగ్ ఫ్లూట్, ఇట్ ఈస్ ప్లెజెంట్ టు ద ఇయర్స్. కృష్ణ ఇస్ వేరింగ్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ఫ్రాగ్రెంట్ గార్లెండ్స్. The fragrance emanating from Krishna's garlands and the tulsi leaves offered to Krishna's lotus feet are pleasant to our nose. So the food offered to Krishna are very pleasant to the tongue. And when we chant the holy names of Krishna, when seeing Krishna, when we offer prayers to Krishna, when we chant the holy names of Krishna, that is great pleasure to the tongue. So like that, and also when Krishna blesses us with his hand, then it's very pleasant to the sense of touch also. Like that, seeing Krishna's form is pleasing to all senses. So, sarvendriya gunanjanam. And further he says, snigdha pravrudghanashyamam sarva saundarya sangraham charvayata chaturbahu sujata ruchirananam. Snigdha pravrudghanashyamam. Krishna's form is so glossy and soft. Ghanashyamam, his bodily complexion is very dark like the monsoon cloud. Sarva saundarya sangraham, Krishna's form is the collection of all beauties. There is so much of beauty in this world, in this material universe, and there is unlimited beauty in the spiritual world. If you bring together all that beauty, the personification of all that beauty and the source of all those beauties is Krishna. He is the collection of all beauties. Sarva saundarya sangraham. Not only Krishna's physical form is beautiful, but Krishna's character and heart is also beautiful. What is the specific aspect of Krishna's beautiful heart? He gives more credit to his devotees than he takes for himself. Krishna just played the role of a chariot driver in the Kurukshetra battle, and he gave all the credit of killing Duryodhana's party to Arjuna and of course Bhima also. Like that, he gave credit to his Pandavas while he just played the role of a chariot driver. And in this way, Krishna gives more credit to his devotees than he takes for himself. That's why he is called Sarva Saundarya Sangraham. And Charvayata Chaturbahu Sujata Ruchirananam. And Krishna also has this four arms in which he holds different transcendental weapons. And Sujata Ruchirananam, and his smile is so pleasant. And further, the beauty of Krishna is described in the 46th shloka. Padma Kosha Palashaksham Sundara Bhru Sunasikam Sudvijam Sukha Polasyam Samakarna Vibhushanam. Padma Kosha Palashaksham, Krishna's eyes are like the interiors of lotuses. So he has lotus eyes. Padmakosha Palashaksham Sundara Bhru Sunasikam. His eyebrows are so beautiful and his nose is also very beautiful and raised. Sundara Bhru Sunasikam Sudvijam Sukapolasyam. His forehead, his head are extremely charming and Samakarana Vibhushanam. And his eyes, ears are very symmetrical and they are very beautifully ornamented with alligator shaped earrings. In the 47th and 48th shlokas, Shiva says, Priti prahasita pangam alakai rupa shobhitam lasat pankaja kinjalka dukulam mrishtakundalam. Priti prahasita pangam. The Lord smiles with such love and affection for his devotees. Priti prahasita pangam alakai rupa shobhitam. His beautiful face is encircled with frames of hair. Locks of hair, which is so beautiful to look at. Alakai rupa shobhitam. And Lasat Pankaja Kinjal Kadukulam Rishtakundalam, his cloth is resplendent with a shining yellow color, which is like the lotus pollen. And Mrishtakundalam, his earrings are also very enchanting. Then there are so many such beautiful descriptions of Krishna's form. Spurat Kirita Valaya Hara Nupura Mekhalam Shankha Chakra Gada Padma Mala Manyuttamardhimat. Then next shloka says, Shankha Simhaskanda Tvisho Bibharat Saubhaga Griva Kaustubham Shriyaya Shriyana Payan Yakshipta Nikasa Asmora Solasat. So in this way, Shiva describes the ever-increasing beauty of Krishna, the beauty of Krishna's shoulders, Krishna's chest, and his navel, everything. So there is it's a long description. And one thing about Krishna's navel. Pura Rechaka Samvigna Vali Valgudalodaram Pratisankrama Yadvishvam Nabhya Vartaka Bhiraya. In the 50th shloka, Shiva says that the Vishvam or the universe comes out of Krishna's navel, means Garbhodak Sai Vishnu's navel. Garbhodak Sai Vishnu is a form of Krishna. So the universe comes out of Krishna's navel, and the universe will think that why did I leave that beautiful form of the Lord? Let me go back. Pratisankramayat Vishwam na bhyavartaka bhiraya. So how can I leave that beauty? Universe thinks like that. But it's the Lord's will. Universe has to do its role. So like that, Krishna's beauty is really irresistible, and no one would like to leave that beautiful form. And further, Krishna's lower body is beautifully described, and finally Krishna's lotus feet are described. Generally, the sequence is, a devotee starts describing Krishna's form from lotus feet to lotus face, but Shiva does the opposite. Shiva begins from the lotus feet and slowly comes down to lotus feet. It's very unique. Rudra Gita is very unique. 52nd shloka says, Pada sharat padma palasha rochisha nakhadyu bhirno antaragham vidhunvata pradarshayasviya mapasta sadhasam padam guru marga gurur tamojusham. Pada sharat padma palasha rochisha. The toenails of Krishna's lotus feet emanate such wonderful effulgence. Shine. Nakhadyubhir no antar agham vidhunvata. That nakhadyubhir. Nakha means nails. Dyuti means the effulgence. The effulgence emanating from the toenails of Krishna can completely vanquish the darkness or ignorance within our hearts. So when we take darshan of Krishna's lotus feet, we should pray that Krishna destroys our ignorance in the heart. Pradarshaya sviyam apasta sadhasam padam guru marga tamojusham. O Lord, you are the Supreme Guru. Please show us the way to cross over this ocean of nescience and reach your lotus feet. In this way, devotee offers prayers. So in this way, our Shiva glorified the form of Krishna. In the first part of his prayers, Shiva offered prayers to different expansions of Krishna for the purification of his own internal senses. And secondly, he described the beautiful form of Krishna. In the third part of Rudra Gita, Shiva describes the glory of Bhakti Yoga. So he says, the result of meditating on Krishna's form is freedom from death and purification of soul. And the Lord, that Lord in his beautiful form is obtainable by performing bhakti. In the 54th shloka, he says, Bhavan bhakti mata labhyo durlabha sarvadehinam swarajyasya pyabhimata ekantayanatma vidgatihi. So Shiva says that Bhavan bhakti mata labhyo, O Lord, you are obtainable by bhakti. One who has bhakti can attain you. One who does not have bhakti cannot attain you. Durlabha sarva dehinam, although it is extremely difficult to attain you by common people, still devotees can attain you easily by bhakti. Then pure devotional service is extremely rare, and even time factor also cannot touch a devotee. He says, Yatra nirvishta maranam krutanto nabhimanyate vishvam vidvamsa yanvirya saurya vispurjita bhruva. This time factor can cause destruction to every single material thing in the entire cosmic manifestation, but a devotee is not destroyed by time. as time progresses, the lifetime of a materialistic person is getting reduced. He is one day closer to death. As the days are progressing, years are progressing, he is coming closer and closer to death, his own destruction. But in a devotee's case, in a devotee who is dedicated to Krishna Katha, as time progressing, the devotee's love and affection for Krishna is increasing day by day, minute by moment, second by second, and he is coming closer to Krishna. So with the passage of time, devotees come closer to Krishna and closer to the spiritual world, and with the passage of time, materialistic people will come closer to their own destruction and death and another life. So bhakti is the topmost, and an important aspect of bhakti is association of devotees. Here Shiva says, kshanardhe napitulaye nasvargam napunarbhavam bhagavat sanga sangasya martyanam kimutashishah. Kshana ardhe napitulaye, you take a tula, a balance, and on one side you put half a moment of association of devotee, on the other side you put liberation and heaven. So liberation and heaven become insignificant. So when you put tula like this, this will come down and that will go up. A half a moment of the association of devotees is more valuable than the greatest benedictions of svarga and apavarga, heaven and liberation. That is the effect of association of devotees. In the association of devotees, we get inspiration to practice bhakti yoga. We get instruction, we get guidance to practice bhakti, and we become aware of Krishna's glories. We develop love for Krishna, and this is a greater benediction than going to heaven or attaining liberation. So Shiva fervently offers prayer, "Oh my dear Lord, if at all you want to give me any benediction, give me the benediction of association of devotees." He says, "Athana gangres tava kirti tirthayor antarbahisnana vidhuta papmanam bhuteshvanukrosha susatvashilanam syat sangramonugraha esha nastava." Athana gangres tava kirti tirthayor. He says that, "Oh Lord, if at all you want to give me any benediction, please give me the association of devotees in which I can get an opportunity to hear your glories." Right? So he says that bhuteshu anukrosha susatva chelanam. The devotees have such exemplary character that they are constantly showing their mercy upon common living entities. Then finally, he glorifies the devotees like this. Nayasya chittam bahirartha vibharamam tamo guhayam cha vishuddham avishat yad bhakti yogan grihita manjasa munirvichashti nanutatra tegatim. He says, nayasya chittam bahirartha vibharamam. Oh Lord, the chitta, the consciousness of devotees, will not be distracted by bahirartha, by external senses, by external sense gratification. Their chitta is never distracted like that. Yad bhakti yogan grihita manjasas munir vichaste nanutatrate gatim. They are totally unagitated and they are totally absorbed in devotional service. No agitation on a material plane and absorption on a spiritual plane. These are the characteristics of a sincere devotee. And I want the association of such devotees. In this fourth canto, we saw Dhruva Maharaj praying for association of devotees. Prithu Maharaj prayed for association of devotees. Shiva is also praying for association of devotees. Later, following the footsteps of Shiva, Prachetas also will pray for association of devotees and an opportunity to hear Krishna Katha in that association. So the greatest benediction that a devotee can aspire for is to hear Krishna Katha in Vaishnava Sangha. This is the topmost benediction. So that completes the third part of Rudra Gita, where Shiva glorified the process of bhakti. And now in the fourth part, last part of Rudra Gita, he describes the relationship between the Lord and the cosmos. He says, "Oh Lord, you are Brahman, you are the creator, you are the maintainer, you are the destroyer. From your bodily pores, millions of universes come out, and you enter each and every universe as Garbhodakasaya Vishnu. From your lotus navel, Brahmaji manifests, and all the universal planetary systems manifest. So you are time factor, and you are everything. You destroy, you maintain, you create." So in this way, the Lord Shiva teaches Rudra Gita to the Prachetas. and Prachetas have heard this whole wonderful prayer from Shiva, and that they learned this prayer and they chanted this Rudra Gita for 10,000 years while doing austerities under waters in that forest. So then Shiva just departed. He told that I have been taught this Rudra Gita by Lord Brahma. So now I have taught this to you. So you please chant this and perfect your life. So one who chants this Rudra Gita is a very perfect devotee, and he will get supreme auspicious knowledge and he can conquer the Lord also. So like that, Lord Shiva taught Rudra Gita and Prachetas chanted this Rudra Gita for 10,000 years. And while the Prachetas were chanting this Rudra Gita and doing austerities, their father Prachinabarhi was absorbed in performing some karmakandic rituals. So Narada Muni goes and enlightens that Prachinabarhi. So how did that happen? We will see in the next episode. Today we discussed three chapters. The 22nd chapter, in which there was a beautiful conversation between Prithu Maharaj and the four Kumaras. And the 23rd chapter, in which Prithu Maharaj perfects his life and goes back to Godhead along with Archi. And the 24th chapter, in which we saw how Lord Shiva enlightened the Prachetas with Rudra Gita. Thank you all very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.